Well, 'tis the season to be jolly, but also stressed and overscheduled comes to mind as well. You may know, and I know, that exercise is a great way to keep your spirits up and, you know, to be positive emotionally and keep the weight under control. But sometimes prioritizing at this time of year can be a real challenge. Larry Mueller here, physical therapist Bill Boisenault and Lori Time Brody with us today to share what they know and give us some advice on how we can enjoy the season instead of suffering through it. Bill's an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Sports Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. And Bill, great to see you again.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be back. A wrap up 2012.
Yeah, we're wrapping it up Time Brody, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh.
Lori's a physical therapist.
Where'd this year go?
Well, I know.
Yeah, where'd the whole year go?
Yeah, exactly.
She works out of the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center.
You bet.
And has for quite a long time.
Yes, I have for a long time. Back when it was on University Avenue in the old Whole Foods building. There are probably some listeners out there who remember us exercising in the big window there at the stoplight across from Shorewood.
On full display.
On full display. That's right. That's right.
Well, we have we have some challenges keeping the exercise routines going in the wintertime, don't we?
Well, yeah. I mean, the good and the bad about the snow is for the people who like to walk and run, you know, having no snow has been good, although I have spoken to people who have slipped and fallen after that one little storm we had, you know, a week or so, or was it 2 weeks ago now. You know, you get up in the morning, you know, people work. There's only so many hours in the day, so you get up before work or whatever, or after work, and it's dark.
Right.
So I can't emphasize enough, you know, knowing your path, taking your time. And I know you like to get that power walk because it's cold and it keeps you warm and you get your juices flowing. But, boy, you've got to be careful when it's icy and it's dark. You know, headlamps, anything to help light your path. And if it snows, like they say it's going to this week, things like yak tracks for your shoes are really important. Yeah. Or walking poles, even if you don't really need them for any other reason than to catch your balance if you slip.
Yeah. They're good tools as well. And the holidays are kind of a microcosm of trying to stay in some sort of routine over the winter time. And, you know, people travel, you know, work schedules are different. We have lots to eat and sometimes lots to drink around the holidays. And, you know, missing a few days or, you know, 4 or 5 days of your usual routine tends not to be a problem. But I think we all know, you know, when you get sick and you don't exercise for 2-3 weeks, it's really hard to get back into routine again.
Yeah.
So people, if they're traveling over the holidays or just home, but a different routine than normal, you know, working in some exercise time, whether it's the usual amount or not, will make the less of a transition when you get back to your normal routine at some point early next year.
Right. That's so true. And the, you know, the old adage of something is better than nothing, because so much of exercise is habit.
Yes.
And when you get out of the habit and it gets pushed out on your priority list, it's hard to move it back up. So even if you, you know, continue to get up and do your exercises, even if you do half of it, but staying in the routine is going to make it easier to get back into it over the New Year's.
Yeah. And I know, well, for myself, I, you know, I was injured in September. This nagging thing has hung on. So it's meant that I put on about 15 pounds in September. And
ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
And it's mostly because I can't do the things that I'd like to do. And so it's going to be hard to get back. You know, I'm still having that problem with my knee, so it's going to be hard to keep it going. I'm sure there are other people in the same boat as me.
Right.
Yes.
Well, and, you know, you kind of wait and you say, well, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And then a certain amount of time passes and then you have to say, okay, it's maybe it's going to get better, but it's taking longer. So I have to find an alternative.
Yeah.
So some other kind of exercise, even if it's not your favorite thing or your usual thing, doing something to help, you know, maintain your exercise routine and prevent that weight gain is really important.
Joyce in Chippewa Falls has a question for us. Hi, Joyce. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question has to do with spinal stenosis. I just need to know more about it. It's been my most recent diagnosis. I have degenerative disc disease and arthritis from a car accident when I was 17, and then this a high mileage body, being an athlete, et cetera, et cetera. I'm now 60. And lately what's happened is I have this extreme pain on the left hip, and it's going down the front of my leg, not the back, which is real different. And I've gone to my PT, and he's saying it's probably early stenosis, and an MRI could confirm that. I don't have health insurance right now, so I can't afford the MRI. But I'm just curious what's happening in my spine. What is the prognosis, and how can I prevent further deterioration?
Okay, all really good questions. Spinal stenosis is, it's narrowing within the spine. We have a bony vertebra in the spine, and there are what are called foramen or openings for nerves and the spinal cord. And there's a certain amount of space that is necessary for the nerves to remain healthy. And what you described, degenerative disc disease, which essentially is osteoarthritis of the disc space or facet joints, the small joints in the back of our spine, can cause narrowing. And so it tends to start showing up when people get in their 50s, 60s, 70s on up. The pain, it's more common to have leg pain versus back pain.
Yep.
But the big thing that when you start thinking about whether it's injections or possibly surgery is what's the neurological status. So if you're having numbness, tingling in one or both feet, if you're having weakness in the legs, having trouble with stairs, going up or down, or tripping over your toes, then it's more of an emergency. And that's where the MRI would come into play, because when you have those symptoms and they're worsening, surgery should be moved toward the top of the list of what's considered. If neurologically there's no issues, especially below the knees, and there's no changes in bile or bladder function, hard time starting urine stream or losing urine, for example, I mean, those also can be associated with spinal stenosis. And if those happen, you need to call your physician right away. If pain is the issue, not that pain is fun to have, but you don't have any of the neurological findings, then it comes down to, can you find ways to get relief of pain that carry over so you can spend more time on your feet and walk further distances? People with spinal stenosis have the most trouble on their feet. They tend to be better when they're sitting. So trying physical therapy to get the pain up out of the leg, that is the first step. There's times where, whether it's traction, to try to give more space for the nerves. If you have access to a pool or the therapist can work with you in the pool, the buoyancy in the water allows people to be a little more aggressive with their flexibility and their trunk stability activities. Or there's also unweighting machines that you can use over a treadmill or over a bike, which allow you to exercise at higher levels without stressing the nerves. If you've gone to a therapist who's got expertise related to spinal problems and you're not making progress, you know, if there's another PT in that clinic who can give it a second opinion, and they can't come up with anything differently, then going seeing your physician would be the next step. But MRI really isn't necessary to make the diagnosis, because I don't think it wouldn't change the initial plan of care. But if there's neurological findings or the pain is getting worse, not better, and you're thinking injection, then the MRI can provide some guidance whether those are realistic tools or not.
Mm. Okay, great.
All right.
Joyce, can I ask how long have you been going to physical therapy?
For about 5 years. You know, I go when I have flare-ups.
Okay.
You know, he always says it's a mechanical issue.
Yes.
You know, to try to get the spine aligned, I think, is what he means. And, you know, then I'll do something stupid like lift a 50-pound bag of garbage.
Don't do that, Joyce.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, that's pretty classic, Joyce. And, you know, physical therapy isn't an ongoing, continuous thing for years and years and years, but physical therapy will help get you out of the hole. When you do something silly and you cause a flare in your back and you have increased swelling that puts pressure on those nerve roots that Bill talked about, then you'll have an increase in your symptoms, and physical therapy can help get you know, back on track again, and then you kind of move to a maintenance and wellness program. But physical therapy should be used when you need help getting out of that hole.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Joyce.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling. David in South Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thanks for the program. I became a vegetarian a couple years back, and I've lost a lot of weight, and I'm left with two issues in my trunk area. The first one is my buttocks. It seems when I sit down, either have pain in my rear end or otherwise it falls asleep. I think I lost some muscle mass in the process. And on the flip side of that, I got intestinal bulging. And everything's fine as far as the doctor is concerned. She's just said my intestines are kind of convoluted. So I'm wondering if you might recommend a couple issues for both sides of the coin, so to speak. A couple of exercises, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, the buttock first. Does it seem to make a difference if you're sitting on a hard wood chair versus a soft, cushy chair in terms of the pain and falling asleep?
If it's soft and cushy, it falls asleep. But if I sit on a hard one, I get the pain.
Okay. All right.
It seems like it's more like it's bony back there now.
Yeah. Well, and if you lost a considerable amount of weight, that certainly can do it. You've lost some of the padding back there. Well, what I'd recommend is getting a cushion. This would be for the harder chairs, like the dining room chairs or wood chairs, is to either sit on a pillow, you know, a pillow from the bedroom or a throw pillow, and just see if adding padding like that makes a difference. If it doesn't, then I guess what I would do is I would maybe go see a physical therapist, because the pain may be coming from your low back. If you get the pins and needles when you're sitting in softer chairs, that means your spine's usually in a different posture when sitting in more of a firm chair. So if simply adding more padding doesn't get rid of this for you, then I would go see a physical therapist, have them evaluate you, your sitting posture, your strength related to your spine and your hips both. The intestinal bulging, if I interpret that correctly, I mean, so did your physician, do you have a diastasis or a hernia?
No, he just said, this is when I had my colonoscopy, he just said that your intestines are rather convoluted, so that's all that I have. I don't have any problems or anything.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Well, then, you know, then I think if, you know...
You know, one suggestion was compression underwear, but I think that cuts off your circulation if you just sit around and you're not moving.
Well, it can really dig in the front of your thighs. I'm not aware of any particular exercise related to what you described with your intestines. You know, if your abdomen was bulging, there are certain strengthening exercises not to do that can make that worse if it's a diastasis or separation of the abdominal muscle, but that's not what I'm hearing from you. You know, for buttocks, I would try the padding first. You know, add the padding to the chairs and see if that makes a difference. And if not, then I would go see a physical therapist, have them examine your hips as well as your spine and see if they can figure out where the pain is coming from. And then are there specific strengthening exercises to address these needs?
David, are you doing any exercise now?
Just a power walk, yeah, usually in the mornings, and then I'll try and do some quads during the day. I don't know particularly what muscle the rear end, what motion the rear end actually does for you.
Oh, good question. Well, if you're in standing, some of it is stabilization. So if you stand on one leg, the muscles on the weight-bearing leg will be working to stabilize your pelvis. So some of them are stabilizers. And then the other way they help you is by lifting your leg backwards. That being said, you have to be very careful in exercises where you lift your leg backwards, because what I see is the majority of people do them incorrectly and hyperextend their spine and actually make their back pain worse.
Oh boy.
So something like that should be done with the guidance of a physical therapist or someone who understands the good biomechanics of exercises. Squats also can work that muscle group, but one of the things we've seen with exercises like squats is it's very dependent upon how you do them. You can do them in ways that really activate your buttock muscles, and you can do them in ways that don't activate them at all. So thus, I think it's great that you would try to strengthen those, because it's going to help you in many, many ways, but I think you should get some guidance about it.
Good luck.
And one other thing, too, related to weight loss. I mean, I don't know if David's still on the line or not.
Yep.
But he changed his diet, sounds like pretty dramatically. It sounds like he's working with his physician. You know, weight loss can be a warning sign of underlying disease. The general parameter is if people lose 5 to 10% of their body weight over a period of a few weeks to even 6 months for no reason, they haven't purposely changed their diet like David did, or yeah, they haven't purposely changed their activity level, that's unusual. And people tend to lose weight for more serious conditions when they lose their appetite and or they're nauseated and just there's less food intake. But really rapid weight gain for no reason and this slow, steady weight loss we can have more rapidly or slowly if they just simply lost their appetite, you know, that's when they should go check in with their physician, which sounds like David is what David did.
Yep. Thanks for calling, David. Appreciate it very much. Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today as we talk with them about staying active in the winter while avoiding injuries. Larry Mueller here, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about staying active and avoiding injury with our two guests, Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, who come by every month to talk with you and with me about how to do that. The number to call if you have a question, and I believe we have one open line yet, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Dan in Partyville has a question. Hi, Dan.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling for my wife. She tore her meniscus and had meniscus surgery 3.5 years ago. It doesn't really bother her too much. Once in a while, her Baker's cyst acts up. In the summer, we ride bike, and that doesn't really give her a problem, except maybe uphill when she puts a little pressure on it, but that's just fleeting. Now that we can't ride bike in the wintertime, we were wondering if cross-country skiing would be okay before we invest a lot of money in it. She can't do elliptical because that's standing and the rotation really puts a lot of pressure on. So we were wondering about maybe cross-country skiing.
So the rotation of the elliptical, is it the weight bearing or is it the rotation? Because the rotation, you rotate on a bike also.
Right, no, that doesn't bother. I think it's because she's standing and rotating.
So weight bearing and rotating.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay, so cross-country skiing, weight bearing, sliding, yeah. You know, it's a little hard to say because it depends upon where in the joint her arthritis is.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's in the back of the joint, then cross-country skiing, you know, the traditional style will probably be okay because most of the weight bearing is going to happen more towards the front of the knee.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where you can't really say until you try it. So my suggestion would be to rent some skis when we get snow. There are places, probably the rec department, I'm guessing places like REI might rent them. Okay. And I would say to rent them and try them out first before you invest in it.
She just told me that the arthritis is in the front.
It is in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little
iffy.
It's a little iffy. So I'd want to try it out first. The other issue is it's pretty repetitive and you tend to weight bear on the same parts of it of your knee. Then the other factor is the fall factor.
Mm-hmm.
If she takes a fall and torques her knee, she could further tear her meniscus. So I don't know how skilled or stable she is, but I know I've fallen on my skis on more than one occasion. So how does she do walking?
Walking is fine.
You know, the other possibility you could try would be snowshoeing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So those are a little more stable. It's more like walking. You can vary your stride and step length some, so you'll have a little more variety. So, you know, that's another possibility. And again, I'm pretty sure you can rent those and try those out.
So we should get some snowshoes before Thursday.
Yeah,
get them before
Thursday.
Yes,
hurry up. Maybe before Wednesday night.
And frankly, we do both, and they're both a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The cross country is fun, and the snowshoeing is fun.
Well, we live
too.
Out in the country, so there's a lot of land around us, so maybe I'll suggest that. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You betcha. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. There's some costs involved, but you can get set up fairly inexpensively, and frankly, in snowshoeing or cross-country skis.
Well, and I'm guessing there are places where you can get used equipment around Madison pretty easily.
Yep.
Or for those people who got it and didn't try it, Craig, it didn't work out, Craigslist, things like
there's
that.
There's another good place to shop, yes.
Exactly.
Exercise equipment across the board.
Right, exactly.
Teresa in Green Bay has a question for you. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having your guest.
Sure.
I have been going to a chiropractor for probably a good 10 years. I have slight scoliosis in one leg shorter than the other. And I've been in more pain recently. And I was just wondering, what's the difference between going to a chiropractor and doing physical therapy?
Okay. That's a good question, because there are a number of listeners and people I've seen that who have gone to both, and some have the same question. There's a wide range in both professions of the type of care they provided and which patient population. So I'm going to give you kind of a general overview of the two. There is some overlap from a treatment perspective. I mean, both groups used joint manipulation or mobilization. Both groups typically imply some degree of exercise or physical agents. The underlying rationale is where we really differ. If you look at the practice acts for both PTs and chiropractors, for chiropractors, you'll see the spinal subluxation impacting nerve energy, and that can lead to pain syndromes and diseases. And so the focus of general chiropractic care is to identify the spinal subluxation, do the adjustment, and identifying the subluxation usually is based on X-ray or plain films. For physical therapists, we rely more on movement and posture. We're experts in movement assessment. So I see somebody with low back pain. I'm not thinking what has subluxed or dislocated, but people can't bend forward or can't bend to the right, and I try to figure out why. Sometimes it's due to muscle weakness, sometimes muscle tightness, sometimes a joint can move too much in one direction. So the focus of my exam would be more related to movement, in identifying abnormal patterns and then changing those or correcting those. It's really the rationale that drives the treatment choices are different. The manipulation is a part of physical therapist practice. It's a relatively small part. I think the combination that you should be getting from most any physical therapist, a combination of manual therapy, exercise, and patient education. And again, tied more to movement. So I'm assuming you're having back pain. I think when you go see the physical therapist, they won't need any imaging done. They would assess your posture and how you move in different directions and trying to figure out why you can't move better in some directions than others. And tie that to function. What can't you do during the day during the pain, and then try to change those things and see if they can get you functioning at a higher level and be more comfortable.
Okay, I have been trying to do a little bit more stretching. Mm-hmm. Is that like something I should not try and do on my own until I do see somebody who can show me what might be the most beneficial way?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, stretching, general principles with stretching is to do slow, sustained stretch. Don't bounce.
Right.
Don't do it ballistically.
Right.
And people with scoliosis, they need a lot of stretching up in the thoracic area, kind of the upper mid-back area as well as the low back area. You can try some general stretching. And if that doesn't seem to be helping after a few weeks, then again, seeing someone who can watch you move, assess specific length of certain muscle groups. Sometimes people need a foam roller or a ball to facilitate the stretch and really get at what's tight. If you try some things on your own and it doesn't seem to be helping after a few weeks, then getting a consultation, people can tell you pretty quickly whether they can help you or not, but certainly give you things to work on your own.
Terrific. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Lots of people probably had that question, so that's a great mm-hmm. answer. Gay and Madison, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My husband and I were great bicyclists during the summer, but we're not hardy enough to be doing it during the winter, and I don't think it's safe. We bought a treadmill from friends that is exactly too short for him and too tall for me. It's gigantic, and we've got it installed in our living room, and we're not going to probably get rid of it. But the as a result, both of us have backaches now from bracing too hard, while we're working out. And I'm wondering first of all, what is the correct height for the arms, where you grip so that you don't fall off on a treadmill? And he's 6'2", I'm not quite 5 feet, and so we've got a little problem, and we want to use it because it's such a good workout, but I'm thinking we're hurting ourselves. Can you give me any hints?
Well, first of all, ideally the handrails are there for you to hold on to should you lose your balance. Ideally, if you can walk with an arm swing like you would normally walk outside, that would be best because it's going to allow you to do to use a normal trunk motion. So if you watch people walk, for example, as your left foot goes forward, your right arm and right shoulder rotate forward to counterbalance the right leg moving back. Did I say that right? Okay, thank you. I got my lefts and rights sometimes confused. So if you are holding the railings on the side, you are constraining your upper body. And so instead, all this rotation occurs in your pelvis and low back, and you have, you know, I envision it like a washing machine, you know, rotator rotating around and around, because all of the motion in your pelvis and low back is concentrated in one area instead of being dispersed throughout the length of your spine. So I guess I would say, unless you have a balance issue, ideally you shouldn't be holding the handrails, and they're there for your safety, but not to be holding while you're walking. So that could solve, that could take you part of the way to solving some of your problems. The other thing that I'd suggest is, and this is to anyone, if you're going to consider buying a piece of equipment, you know, either A, make sure that you can have like a 30-day trial, or join a gym for a month. Around the holidays and the first of the year, the gyms all have these great deals. Get a month membership and try different treadmills, try different bikes. See which ones you gravitate to. See which ones are most comfortable and figure out what are the characteristics of that piece of equipment that attract you to it. And that's what you look for when you buy one at home.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. The other thing, what Gay described is probably fits lots of people, where you change activity. And one of the things that may happen, I mean, running or walking on a treadmill is very different than bike riding.
Yeah.
And it's different spine position, different forces coming up through your legs and the back. And if people start this new activity, using treadmills as the example, it could be too intense, too much of an incline, that the body just hasn't had time to adjust. And so kind of transitioning, kind of slowly, steadily ramping up the intensity can sometimes help new aches and pains from developing.
We have some emails I wanted to look at. An email from Dawn in Madison, who is 60 years old, female, trying to be very conscious of her posture, making sure she stands straight, sits properly. She says, I see a lot of my friends and other women my age getting or becoming hunched over. I'm wondering, once you're hunched over due to poor posture, can it be corrected with PT exercises? And I might add in my comment of my own, is it necessarily the poor posture that's caused the bending over, the hunchback kind of look?
I'm just wondering how many people just sat up straight as you went.
I did.
That's a great question. And typically, yes, it can be corrected with PT exercises. So much of this is habitual. We're, you know, in electronics age, we're sitting over desks, we're sitting over computers, we're sitting over handheld devices. And what tends to happen is our head comes forward, our shoulders come around, and our back becomes, you know, somewhat hunched. And over time, what we see happen is tightening of some of the soft tissues in the front of the shoulder and chest and the front of the neck, and lengthening of the things in back. And that makes it even harder to sit up straight. Plus, your brain learns this and sort of tells muscles that this is normal posture. This is normal posture because this is how you spend most of your time. And you don't want that to happen. So if you can intervene earlier and get on some appropriate stretching and strengthening and postural education exercises, it can be prevented or at least slowed.
Yeah, and some people need a support. An analogy would be an orthotic for the foot. Where just structurally the foot has changed, where exercise cannot restore the normal arches. And some people, depending on what's causing the hunched posture, they need a lumbar cushion, for example, or you know, a chair that puts them in a better position to maintain a more erect posture with less effort. And but exercise and just an awareness can go a long way.
Steve in Madison emailed and wondered if you had any new information to share about over-the-counter meds, the aspirin, the ibuprofen, naproxen, that sort of thing, especially any studies about how they compare in efficacy relative to chronic muscle joint pain and stiffness.
Well, there's been some new research coming out suggesting that the chronic use of anti-inflammatories, such as people like me in middle age tend to do before their workout to get through your workout, is not healthy for your kidneys. So, so there's that. I don't know if Bill.
I mean, it's a good question, and lots of people take these drugs. And I guess the first point would be, if you're going to think of starting to take something new or to increase the dose, is to contact your physician. Drugs can interact with one another. Drugs can interact with supplements and can get people into trouble. And for the non-steroidals, kidney problems, GI problems, ulcers are a major issue. For drugs that you can buy over the counter, you don't need a prescription for. And I guess that's how I would leave it. Just, you know, work with your physician and make sure they know everything you're taking and what you're thinking of doing and why.
Well, he also describes chronic muscle joint pain and stiffness. So I'm not sure what the chronic, if there's an underlying pathology, then you know that needs to be addressed. If it's just, oh, I feel achy when I work out, then that seems more optional. Mm-hmm. But if there's a pathology that's being cared for by a physician, then that conversation needs to happen with the physician.
Mary Ann in Bartlett, Illinois, turning to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi. This goes back to the purchasing of equipment, and in particular ellipticals. They're really big, expensive, and a lot of times they don't have all the different products available to try them, because it's a great tip to try them. So is there anything more you can add to buying an elliptical?
Well, I guess I'd say trying it out is the most important thing. Things like ellipticals, I would want to make sure that you can do it backwards. And that it doesn't just give you resistance or work in a program going forward, because that chronic repetitive forward motion, I see it cause a lot of problems in people. And I haven't seen anything in the literature or epidemiologically about these, but I see it anecdotally in the clinic, patellofemoral pain, other kinds of knee pain, back pain. So I would want to make sure it can go backwards so that you get different loads across your lower extremity joints. I'd want an option of movable arms and stationary arms. And if you're doing the stationary arms, again, you need to watch the posture and that you're not getting too much trunk rotation. That's limited with that. So, yeah, okay. I'd want to make sure it's the right piece of equipment for me if I'm going to buy one thing. I'd want to make sure it's the right one for me.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. Carrie in Bailey's Harbor, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Excuse me. I have been trying to get in every time I hear these two wonderful physical therapists on, and I'm my lucky day. I have always wondered if a doctor's referral is necessary for seeing a physical therapist, or can you just call their offices or walk in and say, I'd like to see someone?
Yeah, it's a good question, Carrie. By law, patients do not need a physician referral. And first of all, that was passed was in the late 1980s. And there's been a few revisions since then that have eliminated some of the restrictions that were there 30 years ago. Now, so by law, it's a referral isn't necessary. Now, your insurance plan can override the law in terms of is it going to be reimbursed or not. Mm-hmm. And at this stage, Medicare and Medicaid still require a physician referral.
Okay.
And then other than that, there are some health plans that may require. One of the things you could do, you could call the PT clinic that you're thinking of going to and explaining, you know, what insurance coverage you have, and then ask them. And they should be able to help guide you whether a referral is necessary or not.
Okay.
All right.
That's very helpful, because so often I'll hear you recommend seeing a physical therapist, and I've wondered if I'm a retired nurse, and it was always my impression that your doctor had to refer you. So
yes.
things have changed, and that's really good to know.
Yeah, well, they have changed. What you described is kind of the traditional model, and certainly we see lots of people who have come referred by a physician. Mm-hmm. But like I said, outside of the insurance plans, it is not required by law, and more people are accessing physical therapy without a referral. And then it's our job as part of our examination to determine, you know, do you need to see a physician in addition to the PT or not? And so there's that level of screening that takes place at that initial visit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carrie. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. One of our guests, the other, Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network as we talk about avoiding injuries and staying active in winter with Lori and Bill, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Jane in Janesville has a question. Hi, Jane. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just would like to know if your panel has any exercises to prevent a hernia in the pelvic, the lower groin area.
Just out of curiosity, why do you ask?
It's very hereditary in my family.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I mean, it boils down to a few things. One is keeping your abdominal muscles and your core muscles very strong. So getting on an appropriate strengthening and core muscle strengthening program would be useful. So that would be the first step. And then the next one would be education in how to lift and move so that you don't strain in that area.
Yeah, and the lifting relates to using your legs as much as you can and not holding one's breath, called a Valsalva. You know, that can also lead to or facilitate a herniation developing. So Lori's right. The core strengthening and then proper lifting mechanics, whenever the situation allows for that, can help.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Steve in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hello. Good program. I always listen to this one. I have a sister who is a runner and also a habitual high heel wearer. And she is complaining of knee pain. And I'm curious, I didn't make the connection until I was listening to you guys earlier, but I wanted to know if there may be a connection there with the structure of the foot in high heels and running that may contribute to the knee, and what can be done to help that?
Well, yes, you know, I always like to joke anecdotally that high heels keep us in business because the foot was...
Especially when you're running them,
especially when you're running them, yes, exactly. They don't have quite the shock absorption right. No, they change normal walking mechanics. So you don't get the sufficient shock absorption that you do. You say, well, but Lori, if you barefoot run, you know, you land in a different pattern and your muscles accommodate. But the thing about high heels is you tend to walk still in the same gait pattern that you would if you were a heel strike runner. That is, you land on your heel and you roll onto the ball of your foot. It's just that your foot doesn't have the capability of accommodating to the surface and going through the normal mechanics of foot, lower leg, knee, and hip rotation that absorb shock. So that means that the shock is really transferred to your joints. You also have difficulty going through what we call the normal loading response at the knee joint, and so it increases your kneecap. Joint reaction forces. So it increases loads on your kneecap. And runners tend to be predisposed to having kneecap problems. So the high heels can exacerbate that. So, you know, certainly high heels, combined with running can wreak havoc with your knee.
Yeah, I think Stephen, of course, I was joking about running in high heels, but your sister's running footwear would be equally important for the discussion. Is she wearing shoes that fit her feet and the dynamics of her feet? And it may be if she's wearing high heels long enough, there can be muscle imbalances can develop. She may need to do some different stretching to address that to help her with the running. There could be a variety of impact from the high heel wearing if it happens often enough.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. I have often wondered what it would be like to wear high heels and have to walk around in them because it looks like it'd be the most painful thing.
They're terribly uncomfortable. Yeah. I can tell you they're terribly uncomfortable. And I know there are women out there, and I apologize to you, who will tell me I have high heels and they are the most comfortable shoes that I wear. Yeah. You know, and I can only say, okay, you know, to each his own, and everyone has different perspectives on it, so...
All right. Jim in Green Bay, I doubt, has been wearing high heels.
Yeah, I didn't want you to get me going there. Hi, I'm a 62-year-old fellow that's an active outdoorsman, and I've had a lot of sports injuries in the past, but I think I've acquired a nagging hamstring pull or tear, which I've never had before, and... Basically, I've had it for about 2.5 months. I had it about 2 months ago, and I was just being very careful of how I dealt with it, not pushing it too hard. And in about 2 or 3 weeks, it tended to go away, and I felt fine for about 2 or 3 weeks. Now, last week, I bent over, and there it is again. But basically what's happening is if I'm bending the knee, like going up and down stairs or walking out in the woods, you know, stepping over logs, I get the pain. If I bend over forward and stretch the hamstring, it's painful. And actually, I can feel a knot, which varies in size. It's on the back of my leg, about 2 or 3 inches below my tail end, but it's kind of more on the inside of the thigh, but on the back of the thigh. And actually, when it's angry, I can look at my leg and you can actually see a little grape-sized thing sticking out, a bump, and it's reddish. I've been trying to massage it at times, you know, to get blood flow. So does that sound like what's going on, and what's the best way of dealing with that?
Well, did you have an injury?
Well, no, not where I felt it go pop or bang or anything like that. I think a few times maybe getting up early, you know, bending over in the closet, I might have started to feel it pull at that time, you know, early morning. Like I said, I'm a 62-year-old guy, so muscles tighten up at night. And I think I kind of felt it starting after that, and then it probably just got a little worse. And, you know, I can walk just fine. That's not an issue. And I can get around a little bit, but if I, you know, would be bending my legs, or I have an old physical therapy routine I do for a knee injury, which, you know, I do regularly, but when this is going on, I have to back off of that, you know, where I, you know, I don't want to squat down to get it where it's painful, you know,
and
really back off.
Right.
Never had a hamstring pull, right. So I'm guessing this might be what's going on.
It may be. Typically, if you injure a hamstring badly enough where you get a ball or a knot, or you rupture some fibers so that it kind of rolls up like a little window shade, typically you would remember that. So the fact that it's been going on for 2.5 months and it's not getting better, and you have a little bulge that turns red and gets angry, I think I'd want to have that looked at before I just said, oh, you need to stretch and do some hamstring curls. Because
I did make an appointment with my sports medicine doctor on Friday.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
Perfect. Yeah.
Good.
So give him that. You know, when you first started talking, it sounded like it could have been referred from your back.
Right.
So that was the first thing that Bill and I were both thinking in our heads with our telemetry here. I could tell by the look on his face he was thinking spine. But then when you said you had that little bulge, it sounds a little more hamstring-like. But it's an unusual enough presentation where you need to have it looked at.
Yeah, well, like I said, when I did take it easy on it and try and do my own therapy, it really went away, and the bulge was, there was probably just a little tiny knot, but then, you know, it's come back, and it's gotten much more significant again. So
Yeah. I mean, it could be a little cyst. It could be anything. And maybe just some physical therapy with some focused deep tissue work there will resolve that. Okay. But get it looked at before you start going and pushing and poking around on it.
Okay.
Good luck, Jim.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Oh, Paul in Avoca. Hello.
Hello. I've had a problem with mostly my right elbow and right hand, possibly related to a bike accident in 2006. I supposedly got a hairline fracture in the elbow. It wasn't too much of a problem until I came to Wisconsin in October of 2009, and I was cleaning somebody's house doing a lot of scrubbing, and my right hand especially got numb. I remember it was really bad. It was waking me up at night. Usually felt okay during the day after I was up for a while. I continue to have this numbness, not as severe at night, but also when I'm doing some job that involves gripping for a long time, for an extended period of time. Some pain in the elbow. I often wear an elbow support when I'm doing work, and that seems to help somewhat. I've been diagnosed with arthritis, tendonitis, carpal tunnel. The last X-ray I had in 2010 showed no acute lesions on the elbow.
Okay. So what part of your hand goes numb?
Well, it seems mostly the fingers, especially the middle finger, is the numbest part. But I also have some slight numbing on my left hand in the middle finger. Never had an accident there, as far as I know. But that's just slight. So it's mostly in the right hand, middle finger mostly, but basically the whole hand.
The whole hand, okay. Well,
not the wrist at all.
Okay. All right. And you're not getting any pain in your hand or wrist or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Because sometimes you can overlook a fracture there. Well, you know, the first thing I thought of was, you know, carpal tunnel, which apparently you've been evaluated for. Also, depending upon, you know, the fracture and the magnitude of the trauma at your elbow, you could have a little ulnar nerve problem, which would make your fourth and fifth fingers go numb. Or if you fell on an outstretched wrist, you could have damaged the nerve as it courses through your wrist and gets to those two fingers. You know, but also the reports of a little bit on your other side make you wonder if you injured your neck at the time of the accident as well, and perhaps no one has looked at that.
Hmm. Yeah, that would require an X-ray of the neck.
Well, maybe, maybe not. A good neurological exam can help differentiate between is the numbness coming from your elbow and or your wrist, or more central or spinal, like Lori described. Depending what that exam showed, you know, plain films might help.
I'm sorry, what might help?
X-rays. Mm-hmm. But not necessarily an X-ray per se. But you need a really good neurological screen that also assesses your reflexes and your strength. And there's a couple other reflexes people can do that would be more spinal in origin versus, again, a wrist or an elbow problem.
Mm-hmm.
When you were treated, did they treat you for carpal tunnel when you got the diagnosis?
No, first I went to the doctor. She asked me some questions. This was in 2010 when I had the elbow last x-rayed. She had went through some things, and she said, no, it's not carpal tunnel. But then when I went back to her the next year, she wondered if it was carpal tunnel.
Well,
without doing any kind of exam.
Oh. Well, it seems as though someone should, you know, do a definitive exam and try treating you for carpal tunnel with some wrist splints, you know, some resting night splints or things like especially.
I have used one of those before. It didn't seem to help.
Okay. Well, you know, the other thing you could request from the physician who's evaluated for that is a referral to a hand therapist who might be more able to do a more definitive examination of your elbow, wrist, and hand. There are certified hand therapists, both physical therapists and occupational therapists, and that person might be able to take the time to do a more definitive examination and provide you with some recommendations.
Mm-hmm. And so that would be something separate from a neuro exam?
No, a neuro exam would be part of that. They do a neuromusculoskeletal exam.
Okay.
But it may be more specific and focused than what you obtain in the physician's office.
Okay, that makes some sense, too. Paul, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And we'll continue here. Lori Tynbrody and Bill Boisenault are going to be with us right up until 12:30 today to answer your physical therapy questions. We'll be taking a look at the news, and then we'll be back with Lori and Bill. So please stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nothing ruins fun more than a sore back or painful muscles. And once a month, we are lucky to have folks with us who know a lot about staying in good shape, getting back in shape after an injury. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tynbrody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Always a pleasure, Lori. Thanks.
Good
for
to me. Be here.
Yeah, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the UW. Bill, great to all as always to see you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, we have so many people who would like to visit with you. And I wanted to start with a Facebook question from Mary, who said, my father used to see an osteopath. Are these doctors still in practice, and do you recommend seeing an osteopath?
The osteopaths have been around 130 years, 140 years when the original philosophy was developed. And these days, osteopaths practice as allopathic or kind of the traditional medical doctor.
Uh-huh.
Osteopaths do brain surgery, back surgery, are rheumatologists, are physical med and rehabilitation physicians. I mean, they're really physicians practicing similar to allopathic physicians. There are some osteopaths that have a strong background in manual therapy. That was kind of the basis of their treatment, you know, again, decades ago. But they have really evolved to be more like, and they do practice as a regular medical doctor would. So okay. Allopathic physicians and osteopathic physicians really can do all the same things.
There we go.
And my guess is there's people out there who have seen an osteopath and didn't know they saw an osteopath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
know.
Correct.
I saw an osteopath 25 years ago, I think. You know, I was pretty fairly young, and he did a little manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I had seen also a chiropractor at one point in my life, and I had and the physical nature of it was quite a bit different. I mean, it was almost there was no loud crack when the osteopath did the manipulation.
Yeah.
It was much more, I don't know, gentle, and maybe that's the case now with chiropractors. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a wide range of manual therapy techniques that both osteopaths and chiropractors and PTs use. But their philosophy was different than the chiropractic philosophy back in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
But the osteopaths have evolved, and as I said, they practice like as a medical doctor.
All right. Yeah. Stephen Portage, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I just had a question in reference to my wife. She was in the military overseas, working out in the gym, and had a couple problems with it that never kind of went away. But going through a trial and error process, they finally diagnosed her with stenosis and lordosis, I think is what it's called. And she has gone to pain management and just had an epidural shot up into the back of her neck, which kind of relieved some of the flexibility of moving her neck. But she still has these problems when she lays down and tries to sleep at night, which is now kind of during the day, where it's almost like an electrical pain sensation that she calls like a muscle spasm, kind of like electrical pain that just shoot down the back of her face of her neck in her head and then go out through her arms, and has led to problems with tingling, and we're just at a kind of an end of what to do next. They had recommended maybe getting some type of a nerve heated to see if they can just, like, deaden the sense from the nerves. Just wonder what your thought was on something like that. Yeah.
Well, stenosis, we had an earlier caller related to her low back, and this narrowing can occur anywhere in the spine. Low back and then neck are the most common levels, and again, the big potential complication relates to the status of the spinal cord and the nerves that are moving out of the neck into the arms. And the lordosis is a natural curve in our low back and neck. A little easier to see in our low backs. And actually, people with stenosis tend to lose their lordotic curve. So many times the spine tends to be a little bit straighter. But lordosis is normal. It's just to what degree, how much of a lordotic curve does one have or not. It's more relevant related to how much narrowing has occurred and how much pressure is on the spinal cord or the nerves. And so the nerves that you have to either, sometimes an injection can be done to decrease the inflammation of the nerve, and that combined with physical therapy can get people back functioning to the level they need to be. Again, sometimes surgery is necessary to give more space for the spinal cord and the nerves. To have a nerve of root ablation, where basically they deaden the nerve, that's also out there, but that's really being used less and less. The nerves are there for a reason. And so the trick is surgery indicated here or not? And has everything been tried from a conservative care rehabilitation perspective?
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Maria in Manitowoc, hi.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry, I love your show. You're so nice.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that. I am calling because I'm trying to decide whether or not to see a physical therapist or to see an orthopedic surgeon or an MD for my knees. It's mostly my right knee. On and off, I have had some knee pain or discomfort, probably on and off for about a year, and I'm not sure exactly why. I walk on the treadmill every morning, probably for about 30 minutes or most mornings, do a little tennis, and I did notice a few months ago that I literally could not step up on my right knee on the stairs, because it just hurt so much with my right knee. Now, what I had been doing prior to that was using the Exercycle more than I had been using instead of walking, just to try to change it up. And I'm not sure. I had always heard that Exercycles were good for knees, and they weren't really bothering me at the time. That's not why I did the Exercycle. I just thought I'd try the Exercycle because I could read and exercise at the same time. And that's when it really became very painful. And so I'm just wondering what I should do or who I should see, and get your input on that.
Well, Maria, at this point, some of it is driven by your insurance, as Bill described earlier. You can legally go directly to a physical therapist.
Okay.
Without a doctor's referral, unless your insurance plan prohibits it, and they would prohibit it only by not paying for it. So you can always go see the physical therapist. It's just whether or not your insurance will pay for the visit or whether you will get a bill for the visit.
Well,
so,
apparently they will see. I did find out that they will let me see a physical therapist without an MD's appointment.
But
I'm wondering if I should do that right now. I mean, my pain is not bad now. It went away after I stopped walking on my knees. I would literally go up the stairs with my left foot first rather than my right foot. It's better, but occasionally on and off, this knee pain keeps coming back. So I'm thinking, should I just see somebody, nip it in the bud before it gets worse, is there something going on? Do I just need to stretch more?
Those are really good questions. Those are the right questions to ask. So first, sometimes it's easiest to figure out what's wrong when your knee hurts.
Okay.
That being said, sometimes it's harder to figure out what came first when your knee hurts, because sometimes when your knee hurts, so many things hurt, it's hard to figure out what's primary. I would suggest going in now. Because my guess is that by looking at your posture, looking at your lower extremity alignment, looking at your flexibility, looking at your strength, looking at how you move, getting in and out of a chair, up and down the stairs, and so on and so forth, they'll be able to glean a lot of information about your knees and why they hurt. Some of it may be activity related and that your activities were not dosed properly. The description of pain with the stairs is pretty classic for kneecap pain, and there are a variety of exercises that they could give you to help address the kneecap pain so that you don't have to wait until it gets so bad that you can't exercise. They can also talk to you about the appropriate balance of different kinds of activities, especially given your strength, flexibility, posture, and so on and so forth. So they can help advise you about how to have the right mix of exercises, which you so prudently tried to do.
Okay. And so would you suggest that I first see a MD to do the x-rays or just go straight?
No. I don't see that that's necessary. I don't think you're going to get much return on an x-ray. No, I'd go directly to the physical therapist in your case.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. I appreciate that.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Judy in Lodi, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. Larry, I listen to you all the time, and I also owe you a recipe. My problem is I've got nerve pain in both legs and feet. And I had, in the year 2004, the extraction of my big toenails, the nails. And the year and a half later is when this started. And it's constant. The burning and pain is just unbelievable. Right now I'm taking Lyrica, but it knocks me out. I'm out like a light after taking it. I can't walk up and down our hallways or, you know, go for a little walk, even to the grocery store. It seems like I'm completely immobile. And there's got to be something in the world that they have a cure, or not a cure, but something I can do. I've seen an osteopath and my regular doctor, and they feel that there's nothing they can do anymore.
So, Judy, what have you been diagnosed with? What have they told you is the cause of the pain?
They haven't. That's what's so weird. My father had the same thing, so I'm just wondering if it's inherited. But he was a diabetic, and I'm not.
Okay. Well, I'm assuming your physician ruled out things like diabetes. What you described sounds like a neuropathy, an inflammation of nerves that can be caused by lots of things, including diabetes. It's possible it's coming from your spine. I mean, if all the medical conditions have been ruled out, has your low back been evaluated or examined?
Yes, it has, and I've got problems with that. Luckily, I was born with an extra vertebrae and a extra disc.
Okay.
And they both have been taken out. But what's got me concerned is where the toenails were taken out, and then all of a sudden this popped up with a year and a half later.
Yeah, you wonder if that's just a coincidence or if there is a direct connection. I would think your medical doctor could probably make a better connection there. Well, Judy, it's really difficult to suggest without knowing why, what's causing this. I mean, it sounds like it's really interfering with your lifestyle big time. I mean, when was the last time you saw your medical doctor for this?
I see him once a month.
Okay.
All right.
Well, when you go back, again, I would just kind of review the symptoms you have and get a description of what they think is going on, what's causing this, and then overview of what's been tried and what else can be tried. And if there's nothing else they can suggest, then discuss going to a subspecialist, a neurologist, for example, or, you know, whatever your medical doctor may be thinking. But I guess I would just confirm in trying an explanation as to what's causing this. And if they're not sure, then who else might you see that could provide some insight into this?
Yeah, because it's just, it's unbearable. I try to walk, you know, somewhat, even though if it's up and down our hallway with a walker and a cane, one or the other. And I just, even to walk from the outside door to a car to take me to a doctor. I can't do it. It's just impossible.
Well, it's a good thing you're staying as active as you can. And again, I would just let your physician know how debilitating this is and all the things you can't do because of it. And just kind of make sure they're up to date of how this may have been changing over the last number of months here.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Have good luck,
thanks,
Judy.
Jeff in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Calling about the pain in my right shoulder.
Okay.
Woke up with it basically about 3 weeks ago. It's the kind of pain that makes it hard to work and lift and raise my arm and hard to sleep on it. I did see my doctor last week. We did have an x-ray, and that came back normal with whatever that means. He said maybe some minor arthritis. He did refer me to orthopedics, but I can't see them until the second week in January. And what I'm wondering is there something I can do physical therapy-wise, exercise, whatever, to keep me going or keep me from backing up until that point?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would, again, you can go to a physical therapist without a doctor's referral, or if your insurance requires it, you've already seen your primary care physician and you've had a radiograph. So it should be very simple to call them up and say, look, I'd like to get started in physical therapy. You know, the fact that you had no injury and you woke up with it and no numbness or tingling anywhere in your arm?
A little bit in the hands and the elbow. Yeah.
On the one side or both?
Just the one side.
And that's new since you woke up?
Yeah.
Okay. And did anyone look at your neck?
No, not really. He kind of poked around a little bit there.
Okay. All right. Because typically when you have numbness and tingling, especially if it's down past your elbow, we start looking at the neck. So again, I would I'd request getting in to see a physical therapist who can examine both your neck and your shoulder. You know, it may be that you slept wrong and, you know, you developed a bursitis in your shoulder that's, again, fairly easily treated with physical therapy. The tingling in, you know, down past your elbow has me concerned that it could be coming from your neck, in which case there are some fairly simple physical therapy interventions that can address that as well. But I wouldn't wait until January. I would get in, because the longer it goes along, the more changes you're going to get in how you move and your posture, your strength, your mobility, and it's going to take that much longer to untangle them in January.
The one thing I do recall the doctor was looking at was the possibility of a rotator cuff problem. Does that
But again, it's not something that you just wake up with one morning. So if you told me that you had been, you know, painting your living room or re-roofing your house or hanging wallpaper the day before, I'd say, yeah, you could have flared up your rotator cuff, but you don't wake up with a rotator cuff problem.
Okay. Yeah, and you don't get numbness and tingling with a rotator cuff problem either.
Right.
Okay. There you go.
Okay, I'll make an appointment with a physical therapist.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Connie in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Hi. I love this show. I try to catch it every month. I'm 69 years old, and I have arthritic changes in three places of my spine, L4-5, T12, L1, and C5-6. I've had a lot of physical therapy for all three of those. What I'm calling about is the C5-6 area, which it's been about 2 years since I had therapy in that area. I had an MRI earlier this year, and I can just read the part that applies to that, if that's okay. Associated mild cervical central canal narrowing and mild flattening of the cord at these levels, and it was all C levels, without abnormal signal within the spinal cord. So what I notice is when I do my workout, which is basically a real simple Pilates workout, but there is a crunch. I have to be really careful with the way I hold my neck, or I will get neck, shoulder, and a pain and a headache that will eventually go away by, you know, maybe noon or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. My son wants to fix my bike for Christmas, and the last time I rode a bike, it was really irritated that my neck and the headache lasted for a very long time. So I'm wondering, you know, is bike riding a bad idea? And is there anything I can do to strengthen the neck until I go back to therapy probably sometime after the first of the year?
Well, the bike can be a bad idea, yeah, depending on your head neck posture.
And the kind of bike.
Yes, and the kind of bike.
You might be better with a recumbent.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. That is more comfortable, definitely.
Yeah, because, you know, when you're leaning forward on those handlebars, it puts your neck in a little bit of extension, which decreases the space available for the nerves and the spinal cord. Yeah, I would agree with Lori. If any kind of bike would be a recumbent bike, or a stationary bike where you can sit up straight and vertical while you're pedaling, that would probably be okay.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of strengthening, yes, you can strengthen the neck. It's also important that you strengthen shoulders and trunk as well. And really, what you described, what it seems to give the best help is stretching muscles that are impacting you posturally, that are maybe holding you in a posture that decreases space available for the spinal cord and nerves, and then strengthening other muscle groups. So the answer to your idea about the bike, you know, upright, sitting, and a recumbent bike are probably fine for you. When you see your physical therapist, again, have them evaluate you from a postural perspective, what might be tight that needs to be stretched, and then what needs to be strengthened, including down into your trunk, to help dictate a potentially better posture for your head and neck area.
Mm-hmm. Right. It always seems that T12L1, it almost feels like my body kind of telescopes, that I have to constantly raise my shoulders to make myself taller, like creating my own traction.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And that makes sense.
It's a great description.
Right. Right. Yep. And don't do the Pilates crunch. It sounds like you're stopping that, but don't do that anymore either.
Well, no. I do it. I should stop that.
Yeah. Yes. Find an alternative.
Yeah. Actually, a physical therapist that is a Pilates instructor instructed me in it. So yeah, that was the last therapist I saw just about 2 months ago.
Okay. Well, the symptoms you're having are first of all, you don't want to be getting exercise and they last too long. I would find a substitute for that.
Yeah.
Right.
And good luck. And thank you very much for calling.
And just briefly about that, often what happens is you see a physical therapist once for 30 minutes and everything seems fine when you do it, but then you go home and you do it repeatedly and then your symptoms start to crop up. So just because a physical therapist told you once to do it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing for you to do. You need to use your own judgment.
And with that, we are out of time, Lori and Bill. And you're normally here the third Monday of every month, but in January, you're going to be here the second Monday, which is January 14th.
That is correct.
Yep, we're going to be at a meeting.
I'll be disoriented all month.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it very much. And just to mention, tomorrow, it's been reported that the perpetrator of the Sandy Hook tragedy had been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome. Tomorrow at 11, we'll learn more about this disorder and why children and adults with it should not be feared. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.